winnowing barley on the threshing floor. Wash, put on perfume, and get dressed in your best clothes. Then go down to the threshing floor, but do not let him know you are there until he has finished eating and drinking. When he lies down, note the place where he is lying. Then go and uncover his feet and lie down. He will tell you what to do. I will do whatever you say, Ruth answered. So she went down to the threshing floor and did everything her mother-in-law had told her to do. When Boaz had finished eating and drinking and was in good spirits, he went over to lie down at the far end of the grain pile. Ruth approached quietly, uncovered his feet and lay down. In the middle of the night, something startled the man. He turned and there was a woman lying at his feet. "Who are you?" he asked. "I am your servant, Ruth," she said. "Spread the corner of your garment over me, since you are my guardian redeemer of our family." "The Lord bless you, my daughter," he replied. "This kindness is greater than that which you showed earlier. You have not run after the younger men, which are rich, whether rich or poor. And now, my daughter, don't be afraid. I will do for all you ask. All the people of my town know that you are a woman of noble character. Although it is true that I am a guardian redeemer of our family, there is another who is more closely related than I. Stay here for the night, and in the morning, if he wants to do his duty as your guardian redeemer, good, let him redeem you. But if he is not willing, as surely as the Lord lives, I will do it. Lie here until morning." So she lay at his feet until morning, but got up before anyone could be recognized, and he said, "No one must know that a woman came to the threshing floor." He also said, "Bring me the shawl you are wearing and hold it out." When she did, he poured into it 6 measures of barley and placed the bundle on her. Then he went back to town. When Ruth came to her mother-in-law, Naomi asked, "How did it go, my daughter?" Then she told her everything Boaz had done for her and added, "He gave us these 6 measures of barley, saying, don't go back to your mother-in-law empty-handed." Then Naomi said, "Wait, my daughter, until you find out what happens, for the man will not rest until this matter is settled today."
Great, thanks, Kirsty. Please keep Ruth chapter 3 open. And in the middle of the blue sheet, you'll see a blank space. There'll be some points coming on the screen, and you can jot one or two things down if you'd like to. How do you know when you really trust someone? How can you tell when your faith is in someone is really certain and secure? Well, you might have heard of a man called Charles Blondin, the great tightrope expert. On the 30th of June, 1859, Blondin crossed Niagara Falls by tightrope. It's a pretty extraordinary feat, isn't it? Witnessed by many people. In fact, he did a number of other things as well, often more extreme feats of daring. So once he did it blindfolded. Once he did it in a sack. The mind boggles about that one. Once he carried a man on his back, who was his manager, Harry Colcord. Once he sat down halfway through and cooked and ate an omelette. And then one time he stood on a chair with only one leg balanced on the rope. Now, one time after those feats, he came back across the falls and said to the waiting crowd, "Do you believe I can walk across the falls pushing a wheelbarrow?" "Yes, we believe," said the crowd, and off he went. He pushed the wheelbarrow back across the falls and back, carrying a sort of sack of potatoes. Then he said, "Do you believe I can carry someone across the falls in this wheelbarrow?" And the crowd said, "Yes, we believe. And then Blondin said, "Okay, which of you is going to get in the wheelbarrow?" And there was a long silence. Faith is really seen when put to the test, when we entrust our lives to the person we have faith in and let them take control. That is really what faith in the Bible is. It is trust in the living God to such an extent that we allow him to be Lord over our lives. And here's the problem with that. It's very hard to do, isn't it? We want to cling on to our lives, holding on tight and refuse to let go. Even if we're believers, we often find it hard, don't we, to let bits of our lives go, which we're desperate to cling on to. Maybe control of our finances, or an area of secret sin in our lives, a relationship, our work. God can have us, we'll say, but not in those areas. They're too precious. They're too intimate for me to allow God to be king. I'll keep control. Thanks very much. Perhaps if you're not yet a Christian, this is the issue for you, that actually you're just not sure you can trust God with your life. You're holding on, unwilling to let go, because you're unsure you can really trust him. But real faith, real trust, is about letting God be king and then working hard to live for him. And of course, the wonderful thing is, he knows best. And he works all things for our good and his glory. The challenge is to trust him. And that's the big lesson we're going to see in Ruth chapter 3. Naomi and Ruth both have to trust God in their situation and show that trust, that faith, by taking positive initiative. They both have to take risks and give themselves over to the care of another in order to be secure and content. And as we look at Ruth chapter 3, we're going to see three aspects of faith which helps us to see what it means to trust God, and in fact, why he is trustworthy. And my prayer for this evening is that we leave determined to trust God with more of our lives, knowing he's committed to us and loves us very, very much indeed. Let's launch into the story, and first we'll look at Naomi. And we'll look at her part in the story, and we will see that faith takes the initiative. Last time we left Ruth and Naomi at the end of chapter 2, and it seemed as if all things were well. Just for recap, in case you haven't been here over the last few weeks or have forgotten, the story began in chapter 1 very bleakly, didn't it? Naomi and her husband and two boys head off to Moab to escape a famine in the land of Israel. Naomi's husband and her two boys die, and she is left bereft, a widow, with just her Moabite daughters-in-law for company. So what she decided to do was to make a costly return to her hometown of Bethlehem, and she went with just one of those daughters-in-law, a lady called Ruth. Both women were widows, without any financial security, and one of them, Ruth, was a foreigner. In fact, a Moabite, an enemy of the people of Israel. Chapter 2 saw their fortune turn, though. Ruth went out looking for a job, and she found herself in the fields of Boaz, a distant relative of Naomi's dead husband. And it looks as if things are on the up. Ruth has come home with a sack full of food and a little bit of hope. So we left chapter 2 with two women living together with food, at least for the time being, and then the credits rolled. But it's not the end of the story, is it? We've got two chapters to go. And the thing is, they've got no one to provide for them. The harvest will soon be over, and they have no male relatives to look out for them, which in that culture was absolutely necessary. Actually, they're no better off, are they, than when they were at the end of chapter 1? Or are they? Well, there is someone who might just be able to help, and that leads to Naomi's cunning plan. So have a look with me at chapter 3, verse 1, and see what the cunning plan is. Chapter 3, verse 1. One day, Ruth's mother-in-law, Naomi, said to her, "My daughter, I must find a home for you, where you will be well provided for. Now Boaz, with whose women you have worked, is a relative of ours. Tonight he'll be winnowing barley on the threshing floor. Wash, put on perfume, get dressed in your best clothes, then go down to the threshing floor, but don't let him know you are there until he has finished eating and drinking. When he lies down, note the place he is lying, then go, uncover his feet, and lie down. He will tell you what to do." Just notice verse 1, what Naomi's concern is for Ruth. She wants to find a home for her, someone who will look after her and care for her. But the word translated home is literally rest. It is a really important Bible word, which means wholeness and contentment and deep satisfaction, final rest from labor. Naomi wants Ruth to enjoy that, which ultimately is found in God. But practically it means finding her a husband who can take care of her. But what do you make of this scheme? I mean, it's batty, isn't it? Pretty extraordinary. Basically, she says, "Right, girl, go and have a shower. Put on that expensive perfume, do your hair nicely, put on your best frock, which makes you look so pretty. Go down to the threshing floor where the boys are, find out where Boaz is sleeping, and pull his duvet over you in the middle of the night. That is pretty extraordinary, isn't it? Basically, she is asking Ruth to go dressed as a bride to propose to Ruth. Now, that is risky, and it's risque as well, isn't it? And it could go badly wrong. Do you remember the setting of the story? We're in the midst of the judges period. That is a chaotic and immoral time. You do not want to be out as a lone young woman wandering the streets after dark. And you definitely don't want to go to a threshing floor where there is a load of semi-drunk men lying around. That is a recipe for potential disaster, which makes sense of Boaz's caution and kindness later. We'll come back to that. Now, I just want to pause here and note two significant mistakes in reading Ruth 3. For a start, this is not an outing that is meant to lead to sexual immorality. Ruth is not going to seduce Boaz. She has something much more godly and kind on her mind. She's going to ask him to marry her and be her redeemer. And nor is this a story about two lovebirds finally getting it together. There are too many books and too many sermons given on this passage, which are basically speculation. We are not told the two were in love. We aren't even told they were attractive. We have no idea if Ruth was pretty, nor do we know that Boaz was a George Clooney lookalike, a sort of ancient Israelite silver fox. This is not the love story between Boaz and Ruth. The author doesn't go there. At least not in the way we think he should. There is sexual tension, no doubt. And this evening in the barn is racy and dangerous. No doubt Ruth is taking a serious risk in uncovering Boaz's feet and pulling the duvet over herself. And there is a love story, but in a very different way. Ruth's love is actually not in the first place directed at Boaz. We're going to see it's directed at someone else. And nor should we see that this is a great manual for how to conduct relationships. If you think it is very strange, isn't it? And I have heard talks on this. Should we therefore encourage our young women to have sneaky rendezvous in barns and to curl up under the corner of random men's duvets and see what they'll do? Should we encourage our young men to hang around in barns and wait for women to turn up dressed to the nines? This is not a passage which teaches us loads on dating. There's something far more significant going on here. But before we see that, and we come to see what that is, I just want us to notice something about faith that we see in Naomi. Faith takes the initiative. You see, Naomi knows that Boaz is the guardian redeemer, that distant family member who has the power to help. In the Old Testament, God laid down a law, we saw this last week, remember, which meant that if a man died leaving his wife a widow, the nearest single male relative should marry her and protect the dead man's name and bear children through that wife in his name. It was a kindness of the Lord to the deceased man. And Naomi knew that Boaz could be a man who could do that, a guardian redeemer, as he was called. But she didn't just sit back and wait for it to happen. She planned and primed Ruth to seek him out and propose the marriage. It was a deliberate act of faith meant to save them and secure their future. And notice verses 5 and 6, Ruth does exactly what her mother-in-law says, even if it means putting her dignity and her personal safety on the line. So Naomi's faith was not, I'll wait and see what God does. No, she took the initiative. She trusted that God had written that law, and then she acted in the light of it. And that is what faith does. It happens at the beginning of the Christian life. See, to become a Christian, you don't just wait around until God zaps you and drags you into the kingdom. You need to take the decision to trust him. Now, yes, he has to work in your heart in order for you to see and understand him, to believe the good news of Jesus. But don't think he's going to do a load of miracles to impress you and persuade you and then wow you into the kingdom. Faith in the Bible comes through hearing the message and responding to the good news of Jesus Christ. Maybe you've talked and you've discussed loads over the last few months and you've still not taken the step of entrusting your life to God. Well, why not? Maybe you need more time. Maybe you need a bit more information. But frankly, I've met many people over the years for whom the questions have just run out. And you know it's true. And you will never get all the answers because God is so big. There will be always more to learn. And you just need to trust him and hand yourself to him. Nothing is more important. That is what faith is. Faith reaches out to the Redeemer and it's rooted in evidence to trust God. And that sort of initiative-taking faith continues in the Christian life. God commands us to trust him by actively walking with him, by actively battling against sin, by actively saying yes to holiness. God will not zap you to make you instantly more like him. Faith takes the initiative to root out sin, to take the initiative to read his word, feed your soul with good spiritual food. Faith is never passive. It is active. We actively seek to walk in God's way. So can I ask each one of us this evening to take stock, to look at our lives, and to ask the question, well, where in my Christian life am I sitting on my backside waiting for God to do something? No, faith takes God as it were at his word and works with him by his spirit to glorious effect in our lives and the lives of others. And Naomi knew that. She knew she needed to act. She had faith which takes the initiative. So that's Naomi. Let's have a look at Ruth, shall we, and see what she does. And she has faith that trusts the rescuer. Faith that trusts the rescuer. Now, we've already seen how Ruth obeys her mother-in-law, even though the scheme must have seemed pretty batty at the time. But she trusts and goes, verse 5, "I will do whatever you say," Ruth answered. So she went down to the threshing floor and did everything her mother-in-law told her to do. And the question is, what is going to happen next? Let's read on, verse 7. When Boaz had finished eating and drinking and was in good spirits, he went over to lie down at the far end of the grain pile. Ruth approached quietly, uncovered his feet, and laid down. So there's Boaz. He's had his pie and chips, and it's been washed down with a few glasses of Chateau Bethlehem 1200, which is a very good vintage, so I'm told. He's happy. He's sleepy. He lies down. Incidentally, lying down comes 6, 7, 8 times in this passage. And Ruth sneaks in, uncovers his feet, and lies down. Now, that is tense, isn't it? There is sexual tension here. She's doing something pretty racy. But there's no hint of sexual immorality or activity. She is, though, making herself very vulnerable. Remember the context, the judges. The worst time in Israel's history for immorality and loss of moral restraint. She's in a barn full of men. You've had a few. And she's a foreign woman. But remember what she knows about Boaz. He is a man of standing. He's a guardian redeemer. He's the man who has the power to rescue her and Naomi. And what Ruth is doing is putting herself into Boaz's hands and saying, "Will you marry me? And will you rescue me?" That's even clearer when we read on in verse 8. In the middle of the night, something startled the man. He turned, and there was a woman lying at his feet. "Who are you?" he asked. It's a very obvious question to ask, isn't it? She said, "I am your servant Ruth. Spread the corner of your garment over me, since you are a guardian redeemer of our family." So Boaz wakes up. Ruth's nicked the duvet, and he's chilly. And there she is, lying at his feet. I think the author wants us to feel the strangeness of this episode. It's pitch black, he hasn't got a clue what's going on, and he asks who it is. And Ruth says, "I am your servant." But notice carefully what she says. "Spread the corner of your garment over you, over me, since you are a guardian redeemer of our family." Now, that word corner is the same word in the original language as wings in chapter 2, verse 12. Do you remember there we heard Boaz saying that Ruth had come to find refuge under the wings of God, under his duvet, so to speak, his cover. And now Ruth says to Boaz, cover me with your wings. It's as if she's saying, look, do you remember, Boaz, what you said to me a few days ago about coming under God's wings? Will you be the answer to your own prayer for me? Will you cover me? Basically, it's a proposal of marriage. The ball's in his court. In fact, in Ezekiel 16, God uses this wings cover word to talk about his marriage to his people Israel. And that's the thought here in Ruth 3. It's not that Ruth wants a night of illicit passion. She wants something far more precious, which is to be married to Boaz and to be rescued by him. But why? Again, it's easy to get this wrong. Have a look with me at verse 10. Why does Ruth want Boaz to marry her? Well, the Lord bless you, he says, my daughter. This kindness is greater than that which you showed earlier. You have not run after the younger men, whether rich or poor. Now again, a misunderstanding, I think, of this passage just goes something like this. Boaz says to Ruth, oh, Ruth, you're such a sweetie. A pretty young thing like you could have gone after any of the young, strapping, handsome men in Bethlehem. But here you are, showing loving kindness to me, an old man, I've got grey hair, you're so kind. And Ruth looks through the sort of misty, actually it's dark, she wouldn't be able to look, but through misty eyes and the romantic music sort of strikes up. I don't think that's what's going on at all. Remember, the author makes no comment on Ruth or Boaz's physical attraction, or even if they liked each other. What the author does comment on is their godliness. Ruth is kind, Boaz is a man of standing, and his kindness comes again and again in the story. The love and commitment Ruth shows is not in the first place to Boaz, though no doubt that did come in their future marriage. It is to Naomi, because Ruth deliberately chooses to marry Boaz because he's the one person who can help the family line to carry on Naomi's family name as the guardian redeemer. Now, yes, Ruth could have potentially had the offer to marry other men, but those guys weren't guardian redeemers. She could have gone off and had a very happy life with them, but that would be to abandon Naomi and cause Elimelech's name to be forgotten. Now, the kindness Ruth shows in seeking Boaz's hand in marriage is not because of some misty-eyed romance as they met over the barley stalks. It is a committed, faithful love to her mother-in-law and her needs. That, friends, is the real love story of the book. And the kindness Boaz says Ruth is showing in chapter 3, verse 10, is the same word hesed that we saw last week. It means committed faithfulness. It means what God showed to his people in chapter 2, verse 20. Ruth is showing that now. She is entrusting herself to the one person who can rescue Naomi and carry on the line, the guardian redeemer. See, the point is, Ruth shows faith that trusts the rescuer, the only one who can rescue her. She's effectively saying, Boaz, will you take me as I am, foreigner, undeserving of any kindness? Will you be my guardian redeemer, my rescuer? And in doing that, she is showing each of us what we need to do when it comes to our rescuer, Jesus. We'll see much more of this next week. He's the ultimate guardian redeemer. He is the ultimate only rescuer to rescue us from sin and death and judgment. And like Ruth, we've got to cast ourselves on him to rescue us. And it's worth remembering vulnerability at this point. Ruth had to lay everything on the line in coming to Boaz to ask him to rescue her, and so must we. She held nothing back, and neither must we. Often I think we come to Jesus, don't we, with almost like sort of fingers crossed behind our backs. Yes, Jesus, I'll come to you if you do this for me. I'll come to you if you don't ask too much of me. Don't ask me to give up that relationship. Don't ask me to change my lifestyle too much. Don't ask for my time and money too much, will you? But remember what trust is. It is giving ourselves wholeheartedly to the rescuer who knows best. This kinsman redeemer, this guardian redeemer, this rescuer Jesus, he's not going to take advantage of us. He's not going to abuse us or hurt us or betray us. He has loved us from the foundation of the world. And he will love us for all eternity. And nothing will change that. So will you come to him? Trust him? Real faith, you see, trusts the rescuer. But there's one last thing I want to show you from Ruth chapter 3. And that's seen in Boaz, that faith is found to be effective. In other words, when we trust the rescuer keeps his promise and is committed to us. Our faith in the rescuer won't be found wanting. It's effective. The rescuer will keep his word. And that's what Ruth found. Let's see how Boaz responded to Ruth's extraordinary request. Verses 10 and 11. The Lord bless you, my daughter. This kindness is greater than that which you showed earlier. You have not run after the younger men, whether rich or poor. And now, my daughter, don't be afraid. I will do for you all you ask. All the people of my town know that you're a woman of noble character. You see what he says? Don't be afraid. See, Ruth has taken this hugely risky step in exposing herself to misunderstanding and even harm. She's basically put her life in Boaz's hands. And the very first thing he says is, don't be afraid. When you trust the rescuer, he will look after you. Your faith is effective in that sense. You're not going to be pushed away or snubbed or left hanging. But there's a little bit of a problem, isn't there, in verse 12? See what he says. He says, although it's true that I'm a guardian redeemer of our family, there is another who is more closely related than I. Stay here for the night, and in the morning, if he wants to do his duty as your guardian redeemer, good. Let him redeem you. But if not, if he is not willing, as surely as the Lord lives, I will do it. Lie here until morning. The fly in the ointment is that actually there's another guardian redeemer who is technically closer than Boaz is. Because Boaz is a man of integrity, he's going to raise this with the man. But the point is, Boaz is committed to seeing the job through. He is going to marry Ruth as long as the other redeemer won't. And notice how he's already caring for her and looking after her in verses 14 and 15. So she lay at his feet until morning, but got up before anyone could be recognized. And he said, no one must know that a woman came to the threshing floor. He also said, bring me the shawl you are wearing and hold it out. When she did, he poured into it 6 measures of barley and placed the bundle on her. Then he went back into town. So Boaz wants to make sure she's safe. She's got to stay the night. I mean, if she cleared off at this point, she would be in grave danger. And also, he's concerned for her reputation. She slips away before any of the other guys are awake. And notice how he fills her up with grain before she goes. Do you remember this theme of fullness and famine in Ruth? Started off with famine, it's going to end with fullness. And in fact, that shawl that Ruth wore next week will be full with something else as well. Just a foretaste of what is to come in chapter 4. Boaz provides in a far greater way for Ruth and Naomi. So Ruth reports back to Naomi the amazing events of the night. It must have been quite a report. Verse 18. Naomi says, wait, my daughter, until you find out what happens. The man will not rest until the matter is settled today. Do you remember the chapter started with rest? Naomi wanted to find rest. Now Boaz isn't going to rest until he sorts it all out. And Ruth is going to discover that actually, when she puts her faith in the guardian redeemer, it is effective. It works. Not because her faith is brilliant, but because of the guardian redeemer. He's terrific. And I want us to end by reminding us that when we put our lives in the hands of our guardian redeemer Jesus. He will not let us down. And we've got to hear that. Our faith is effective in the sense that Jesus comes through on his promises. So important to be reminded of that, isn't it? Whether we're believers or not. If you're not yet a Christian, as you read the Bible, you discover that God is trustworthy. He's not going to let you down when you entrust your life to him. Like Ruth, you can come to him. He's not going to leave you high and dry. He will see the job through. And hear Boaz's word, therefore. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. Come to him even this evening. Many of us here will be believers. And we need reminding, don't we, that our rescuer is not going to let us down. There will be areas in all of our lives where we find it hard to trust God. If I got you up here and interviewed you and you were honest, and I was honest, there'll be a whole range of different things where we would say, I'm finding it really hard to trust God at the moment. But we mustn't be afraid. We're afraid, aren't we, to give him bits of our lives which are precious to us. Maybe it's too painful. But it's not going to lead to us being hurt more when we do that, when we trust those things to him. Yes, it might be painful in the sense of painful to work those things through, but it's the right thing to do. Maybe you're worried about your future. You're finding it really hard to trust him. Maybe your relationship status, or a job, or a family member, and we can't quite give it up. Jesus says to us, don't be afraid. I love you, and I have your best interests at heart. Trust me. So real faith, real trust, that comes when we take action. And when we find the initiative to trust, when we give ourselves to the rescuer, we find such faith is effective. God is able to see the job through. So what's your response? Will you trust him? Or will you hold on to your life? Don't be afraid, says the kinsman redeemer, says the guardian redeemer. Come to me. I will take care of you. I will rescue you. Not just in this life, but for all eternity. Let's be quiet for a moment and I'll lead us in prayer. Lord God, we confess that there are many areas of our lives which we find it really hard to trust you. But thank you that we've seen this evening that you are faithful to your promises. And we need to trust you in every area of our lives. Help us to do that, we pray. Help us to give those things to you. Perhaps for some of us for the very first time this evening. For many others of us, for the umpteenth time, being willing to trust you. Help us in this, we pray, for we struggle. And give us courage. Help us not to be afraid, but to trust for your name's sake. Amen.